Happy frickin' Tuesday. What is up? Welcome to another episode of Inside the Game. This is episode 62. I'm DJ Lee, joined as always by the Muslim, Idra, and In Control. Gentlemen, hello. Another week has gone by, and a lot of shit has happened in the game that we all come here every week to talk about, StarCraft II, including HOTS. And I got a couple things to just fire out there right away. Normally, I ask you guys what's up, but there was a thread that someone posted on Reddit that said, you know, this right now, this streaming, like it reminds me of a time back in 2010 when I would watch Idra and he would be bitching about Terrans and all that. And I was like, I just kind of chuckled to myself. I'm like, yeah, good times.
Good old days.
The good old days. The other thing is, I don't care if it's a spoiler, but I'm a proud team member today because Twitch advances in the AHGL playoffs. Boom. Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah, Control. Slow clap that shit, dog. That's right. Fuck yeah. Closest I'll ever get to winning anything in StarCraft 2.
Well, what's at stake? I mean, like, I actually don't know anything.
Absolutely
about After Hours.
Nothing.
No prize.
Bragging, right? No. Actually, there's a prize, and it goes to charity, and it's for, you know, a good cause. But let's be honest. Let's be not fluffy. Do I really hope that we win so that our charity can, you know, that's great. But I want to fucking crush some fools. That's why I do it.
Who else is in it? It's just
everyone,
all, like,
man.
Google and
yeah, all a shitload, man. We played Amazon. We played Raytheon. We played IBM. Fucking, they had like an AI player on
the
team.
Who's the top team? Actually, who's the team with the most Asians? That's what I meant to ask.
I don't know.
Sure, they're all
I don't know.
Asians.
But you got to understand, like, you know, Twitch, who has 80 employees, and there's, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of companies that are in the same. They have 80 employees. If 10 of them play StarCraft and 4 of them can field a team, you know, it's rough. You got, like, Microsoft and Google that apparently have global divisions and have, like, in-house ranking tournaments and shit. I mean, it could be, like, it could just, they could be stationed in Korea and be a pro house for all we fucking know. So it's rough, man. Raytheon.
Well, you know, good luck, man.
Yeah, afterhoursgaming.tv. Hey, thanks, In Control. Thanks, man. I will. Yeah, if we win, I'm going to dedicate it to you guys.
Please do.
I will.
Thank you.
I will. I'll dedicate it to all three of you guys. If I lose, then I'm going to blame it on all three of you. Well,
that's only fair, so.
Like, they didn't help me enough. Anyway, what's up, guys? The Muslim, how you been?
Really well. I've been streaming a lot, and HOTS has been going pretty well, so feeling good.
Any better with those Hellbats now that you've had a week to...
Oh, God.
Actually, the cargo load, it going from 4 to 2 has stopped it happening significantly. Like, it's still a very strong strategy, but Terrans just don't feel as comfortable doing it anymore. So that's made me a lot happier. Things in general are changing a lot. Like, day-by-day basis, a new strategy can come out, and it can kind of, like, throw you for, like, a run for a little while. But,
Can you give me an example? Like, what have you seen lately that's just kind of like, oh, shit?
Like, for Protoss, a lot of them are opening up 2 gas before they expand, which is usually like, okay, they're going to all in us. And then all of a sudden, they don't all in at all. They just expand, but then they go for, like, some crazy 2-base Colossus all in. And initially, it's just like, what are they doing? Or, like, Void Ray all ins have gone out of fashion recently. Or, when I say out of fashion, just not happening as frequently. And Oracles, too. People are forgetting about Oracles. So, lots of stuff right now. It's still like the mass experimentation phase, and Terrans too. Like, still occasionally you'll play a game where this guy just runs into your base with 6 Reapers, and it's just like, you know, some stuff where you can, like, kind of slap your own forehead. But
you're shaking your head, yes, In Control. like, the Reapers have fucking
Terrans
entered your
base weird
before.
Right now. Like, they're so different. Like, as I heard Ben talking about the different strategies, like, for the most part, the difference with Protoss is you'll get more gas earlier on, so you get a faster Mama Core. You want to jumpstart some of those techs. Colossus is still really good, if not almost even better, because more Terrans are opening up tech-heavy with things like Widow Mines or Battle Hellions. Hellbats. I don't know why I call them Battle Hellions. I'm sorry. But anyways, so you're going to see more Colossus pushes because they're, like, trying to medevac in those kind of units, and as long as the Planetary Nexus or any kind of position Stalkers holds it off, a 2-base timing is really empowered. But it's Terran that is so fucking weird these days. Like, I'll have people just wander in with widow mines, which is the weirdest feeling in the world. like four widow mines just like da 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 da, and they just like come up the ramp and like, we're here to be widow mines, and they just like start dropping down and around, and you're like, holy shit, you're scrambling, and they just shoot missiles and then just kind of chill there, and like, we'll see you again in 60 seconds or whatever it is, and it's just weird. I mean, stuff like that. And I already complained about it, but the medevac thing is still
the boost.
So foreign to me. Like, well, yeah, I get that they come into your base real fast. That's fine. But the weirdest part to me is when they're like, fighting with you, and then they're like, your everything is right here. And they just load up and jet across your entire base, which is like supposed to be dangerous, but with how fast they move, it's not. So it's just taking mental adjustments. That's the fun part right now.
And kind of like going back to what the Muslim was saying and what you were saying, this isn't necessarily on the topic list, but it's kind of an interesting question, is that with a lot of this stuff, the weird shit that has happened, and last week we talked about how it related a little bit to the early days of Wings of Liberty, but how long do you think before that shit actually does stabilize? Like, before, I mean, are pros going to, like, Idra, are you, you know, you've got this tournament coming up, like, what are the chances that it's just like, boom, Reapers in your face? Like,
if it happens before a patch, it's going to be like 100%. I don't know. ZVT isn't as like confusing as the other matchups sound right now. It's okay. Either they have figured out the abusive stuff or they haven't. If they haven't, then they still play Wings of Liberty style. And bio, not particularly good. But if they figured out the abusive stuff, you get Reapers, then you get Hellbats, and you get Widow Mines, and then you get fucked in the ass. It's just absolutely true. And the biggest adjustment that you have to make is to learn to never, ever engage if they have Hellbats. That's the only kind of change in thinking that I've had to make so far. But just, no, every Terran unit is so good now.
It's fine. I remember this time around last year, well, not last year, 2 or 3 years ago, whatever it was, when Wings Liberty was in beta, and we were all like, surely they won't patch it before release. They didn't. Like, it released fairly normally, but then almost immediately after the release, they'll start some patches, which, again, that was Wings Liberty, so maybe they have it more figured out this time for Heart of the Swarm, but sure. You're hearing complaints about the boost of medevacs and widow mines, but in general, no one's, like, screaming out of the top of their head that this game is unwinnable right now. So I feel like we're fairly close to being where the game should be when it releases, and that's pretty exciting, but there's still that interesting thing where, like, a lot of the Koreans aren't playing Heart of the Swarm. Some foreigners, for one reason or another, are kind of holding on, like Nanny was, still playing mostly Wings of Liberty. So the MLG tournament is, and we talked about this last week, but it's going to have some interesting storylines like that. Like, I mean, Greg plays Dodoro in a couple days. No one's seen Dodoro in, like, months.
I actually don't. He dropped out. He's going to be replaced.
Oh.
News flash on Inside the Game. Nodoro's out. Who's going to replace him?
There you go. Yeah. Boo. Hey.
Do you know?
I do, but I don't know if we're supposed to say yet.
Tweet at Slasher. Tweet at Slasher right now.
Yeah, tweet at Slasher.
Why, you didn't have the scoop on that?
Yeah.
Oh, just an essay for us.
Be like, hey, who's replacing Nodoro? And you know what? If enough people tweet it, he'll actually find out. He'll go, I'm being challenged right now. I've got to figure out what it is.
I'm just hoping we have another situation like last MLGDC where we all land off the planes and then we find out that there's been a patch like while we were flying. That was the best thing ever.
Wait a second. Okay. I was going to wait for you to end that sentence.
What?
Because if you're even slightly pessimistic, just a second. What?
I'm very pessimistic. There's no Zergs in the top 10 right now.
God damn it.
Yeah, that's a tough. Well, anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about HOTS at what?
Shut up. Trying to support people with their streams. And do the show at the same time. But this, there it is. Okay. Anyways, isn't that the tournament you won, Greg?
Yeah, it is. No, I'm celebrating that. I'm saying that's what should happen again.
All
right. You want one more. You're looking for one more.
Not good enough. So we're going to make the Locust shoot air, too. And everyone's just like...
Dude.
I wouldn't complain.
Yeah, you wouldn't, would you?
It's one time a year Greg doesn't complain.
Yeah.
Like, you mean to say that the patch is beneficial?
Not bad. Not
tournament.
Bad. last week you guys talked about the marketability of players a little bit in a discussion that we had, and it kind of transcended into the Inside the Game thread on Team Liquid, where you guys both made some, you know, pretty intelligent comments, I thought, well done, about the marketability of players, but I think that there was a little bit of confusion as far as what you guys were saying. And I didn't know if either of you wanted the opportunity to kind of, you know, speak just a little bit more on that, because I felt like, you know, what was being discussed was right, and it depended on which way you were looking at it. But anyway, Jeff, did you want to?
Yeah, okay, so for those of you that didn't catch it last week, there was a few comments in the Inside the Game thread on Team Liquid that brought this up as well. And to be honest with you, the subject is just in general always a little bit, I want to use the word inflammatory, but that's not really the way, I guess controversial, because A, we're all on EG, so the easy kind of red herring slash escape is, of course we talk about marketability because we don't care about winning and we all make millions of dollars and it's all about market, But then the other excuse that people throw out there too is that it's like, it's like a weird selfish argument to create this mental idea. Well, I guess there's no other kinds of ideas, but this idea that this is like our foothold in the world. And if we don't champion this argument, then we'll fade into the background and just not have jobs and sell hot dogs and stuff like that. So that's a long-winded way of saying the idea is that Korean players are difficult to be marketable, or lack the ability to be marketed appropriately to be more than just extremely good StarCraft II players. So the argument we had, and Greg can speak for himself, and I'd love to hear DeMuslim's opinion on this too, but the basic idea is it's really hard to market your Korean players. And if a Korean player is not winning all the time, a lot of times you'll notice comments where people are like, wow, they're in a huge slump, or they must not be playing very much, or they're a has-been, they're washed up. And it's because winning in StarCraft II is so difficult because there's so many good Koreans and some good non-Koreans as well that every once in a while take those top spots. But those non-Koreans will stream more often. Their teams are able to do English interviews with them that then get broadcast out, or in the case of EG and a few other teams, they can create content with those players like an Inside the Game or like a sponsor announcement video where you're putting your eyes on those players and you're creating a familiarity that then translates into you having interest in seeing them play. So when we had said that it's harder to do that with Koreans and they suffer for it, some people had come out and said, no, that's not true. You know, MVP is one of the most famous players in the world, blah, blah, blah. And it's nice that we're having this opportunity to talk about this because, again, this is a concept that's a little bit strange but also a little bit controversial because we're essentially saying Koreans are actually really bad for teams like a Quantic, like a Mouz. Fnatic is another good example. This is kind of where that conversation went, unless you do it correctly. And that's where somebody else can pick up, I guess.
I mean, I just kind of throw this out here, playing devil's advocate a little bit, because if you look at Axiom and sort of the rise of Krank, right? I mean, was that lightning in a bottle, or is Total Biscuit and the Axiom team and Jenna, are they like trying to break that norm a little bit, do you think?
Well, go ahead, Greg.
They're definitely trying to do something different. If you listen to Jenna on some of the shows, they're very much so about like being there for their players and taking care of them. And I mean, they picked up really good players. They got Ryung right before his big run. You know, that's a little bit of luck, but also good scouting. Like, he was a talented player and they recognized that. And they managed to get him with a bunch of other teams bidding on him as well. And then Krank, obviously, he was someone who was poised for success. They realized that, they pounced on him. So they've done a good job picking out the kind of Koreans who are marketable. Like you said, MVP, or like Jeff said, MVP, he's like one of the biggest steals on the planet in terms of StarCraft 2 players. MC as well. But those are the players who are either just so successful or their personalities actually do click. They are willing to put themselves out there and make themselves approachable and relatable to the foreign market. And what Axiom does is they've picked up a couple of players who are kind of like that. Like Krank, he's a pretty outgoing personality. If you watch him stream, he'll interact with the viewership. Violet's another good example of that. So they've gotten players like that, and so they're making a good run at it. But, I mean, it's really too early to say if they're successful or not. Fnatic and Complexity and whatnot were around with all Korean lineups for quite a while, and they eventually folded or got rid of their Koreans. So I'd say if anyone can make it work within the current atmosphere of having an only Korean foreign team, it would be them. But I really think, I mean, of course bias, but I think EG model is better, where we have a bunch of skilled Koreans, and they're not necessarily the most personable. They're not the kind who go out there and just, like, you know, make everyone love them immediately on their own. But we have them. They're really good. They win games. And you know, but then we also have the other foreigners who are really outspoken people, like, you know, all the three of us on the show and some others. And we generate a lot of interest in the team. And we can hype our other players as well as hyping ourselves. So we draw attention to them for them. And then the results speak for themselves on top of that. I think that kind of synergy is what teams really should be looking for if they can afford it.
And I think a lot of people talk about Axiom an interesting way too, because they have just undying faith, and I believe I have this faith as well, where I haven't seen a lot of content from Axiom just yet marketing their Korean players. They had their in-house tournament that was very successful. Jenna and Total Biscuit have done kind of the roundabout, you know, guest on shows talking about it, but everyone just knows they're going to do a great job marketing them, so we already speak about that, and that's fine. I actually got to catch Total Biscuit doing an interview on Chanman's climbing the ladder, and he did a great job of talking about how, between him and Husky, how could you possibly not have enough eyes to create interest with sponsors? Right. And it'll be really cool to see them do that, because they have said they're going to have an all-Korean team. So Greg talked about the EG model, which is a Korean-foreigner mix, so that you let your foreigners do more of the content as well as play. But then you let your Koreans just play, because that's their forte, and then they benefit from the non-Korean aspect of their team as well. Well, Axiom's going to be pure Korean. They've come out and said that. They have no interest in signing non-Koreans. So I'll be very interested to see if they're able to do that, because outside of, like, memory commercials that have worked with, I think it was, like, IM and a few other teams, you don't really see all Korean videos, right? No, I don't think I'm wrong on that.
Not really.
All right, well, not to beat the subject with the dead horse, but, you know, one final question.
Beat the subject with a dead horse?
That's going hard.
Shit,
yeah,
weed.
Yeah, you know, well, that is the extreme. You beat it like a dead horse with a dead horse.
I mean, that's beating a dead horse and the subject the same time.
Exactly. But there's actually one question. I mean, DaMuslim, do you worry about marketability, considering that people can't understand most of what you say?
Don't be a wanker.
Nice one.
Oh, I had to, you know.
Bloody plug.
You were being quiet over there.
I know.
No, I'm just kidding. But if you have any comments on
that. No, I was going to talk about the thing before. Like, people bringing up MVP as an argument. Like, he won practically everything he could win for a while. It's like using Nest T as an argument that these guys are very marketable despite, like, not maybe coming across that way, like, personality-wise. But they won everything. So, you know, if you're winning everything, you say, hey, this guy's wearing
that's
this.
That's your own. That's like ultra-marketing right there.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, if you win everything, like, that's great. But if you win everything and you have a personality too, that's even better. Like, if you think of some names out there, like Byun, he's one of the best players on the planet, despite not really catching a title for anything. And if he was a foreigner and he had a good personality that could be shown to absolutely everybody, like, he'd be an absolutely solid pick for any team. But given how it is and he doesn't get his personality out there, like, that's the kind of thing that, like, goes against him in a way, you know?
Right.
Ouch.
All right, so this viral campaign that went out this past week, the hashtag vengeance, for those of you who label all your posts with hashtags, you know, excessively, that's important. It was a picture, of course, I don't have the fucking picture with me, but it is a picture of a background, a lot of shit happening. It says vengeance, and it points to a date on Twitch. We were actually talking beforehand to try to figure out exactly what the date corresponded with. But you guys have undoubtedly seen it. In fact, I think a few of you had pieces of the puzzle, because I guess what happened is they had just set out pieces. I, like, sat on mine for a while not knowing what the hell it was. I thought it was maybe even a mistake. They didn't tell any of – at least I didn't know beforehand.
I even asked Day9, man, like, the guy that you think would know because he had the last piece, which was like, oh, so classic, Blizzard working with Day9. But he said he didn't know either.
Yeah. So do we know, like, is this for the tournament? We obviously know about the launch stuff.
Yeah.
I can't find the fucking
– I mean, the weird thing about it, and we were talking about this in the pregame show, but it's 2/26, so it's a week from today, a Tuesday. That's not any of the launch parties. It seems like nobody knows, or everyone is out to get me. I can't tell which it is, but nobody actually knows what this is. So this brings on kind of a funny thing, because, like, I would love to work with Blizzard on something. I would love it if they were like, In Control, come on down. We're doing this thing. We want you to be a part of it. I'd be like, oh, Blizzard, thanks. Because they don't even follow me on Twitter. Just saying. So it's kind of a weird thing because it's like either it's that, but they just didn't ask and just assumed that we'd all say yes or something, or they're not using us for anything and instead they're just kind of using our names for viral marketing without asking.
No.
In which case, I guess they can do that because they're Blizzard.
Well, I mean, technically, I mean, none of us had to give up our piece, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I actually got a piece. I didn't notice that. The first thing I saw about it was when they tweeted at everyone.
I don't know.
So,
a lot of us just privately, or they like DM'd us it. But then I thought for some, and if you didn't report your picture, they like actually tweeted at you openly and were like, "Hey, vengeance is coming. You should totally show that thing we sent you."
They tweeted it at me, but I don't know if I got one in private. I never checked my DM.
Oh, okay. It says here they tweeted everyone a picture that was on that list. So I guess that's why they posted the Twitters in the client. Anyway, so I guess that everyone's in chat is saying, well, what is Vengeance? And no one really knows. Nancy Kerrigan's Vengeance against
Mixed. She says it. Yeah. Vengeance.
But what it actually points to...
It is in 1 week. Maybe it's their celebration of our 63rd episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Vengeance. Vengeance.
I don't know how we're
it's
vengeance.
The, maybe it's like what's like going to happen, thing. Maybe what will happen is that somehow Blizzard will take over the pirate airwaves. They will block inside the game and broadcast their own where they will just bitch about us for 2 hours. They'll just be like, wow, there's another thing, you know? Look, that's what will happen.
That'd be so awesome. Dustin Browder bitch. Or actually, David Kim would take the Idra approach, I believe.
Yeah, that'd be great.
He's not smart enough to do that.
Great.
Oh, man.
They're going to get randomly banned again. They're going to be like, it's going to be at MLG. They'll be like, can you send a tech to Station 13? Greg says his account was banned.
No, I think it's like he does enough interviews and public statements and stuff. I think saying he's dumb is an objective statement. I don't think that I can really be in trouble for that.
Okay. I can't be a part of this. David, if you're listening, I like you.
Like a game, we have a show about it every week, man. We wouldn't hurt this. You wouldn't hurt this bad if we. It hurts us more. No, fuck it. We're just mad. Okay, we just want you to fix this shit. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Moving on. So if anyone knows or has an idea what the Vengeance is during open phones, but this does lead, of course, to the launch stuff where we have. Day 9 and Team Liquid coming together. Of course, I think everyone remembers the Day 9 Wings of Liberty launch party. I think it was just kind of a legendary event that sort of kickstarted a lot of cool shit. And here it is happening again, this time with Team Liquid collaborating. And also a somewhat collaboration with Blizzard's official event, from what I understand. So... how hyped are you guys for fucking launch day launch and this party?
Ben, how hyped
are
you?
Ben! What is your hype level hyped, at, you know? Dude?
Massively hyped. Massively. I don't know. this is the first I've heard about it.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know anything about it either. I saw the post and then skimmed over.
I'm reading for it now.
There's fucking cool ribbons players. On here, man! It's a launch party! God,
I'm excited. You know what?
It
feels kind of like for the last few months with the HOTS beta, StarCraft II has taken a gigantic inhale, and on March 12th or whatever, they'll finally exhale, and we'll move on with our lives, because a lot of the tournaments that have happened that are like the last Wings of Liberty tournaments, I've definitely felt the effects of HOTS on those tournaments, where I'm just not quite as excited, honestly. And every single time I turn on a stream, I'm now looking at, is it HOTS or Wings of Liberty? And then that's part of how I calculate which stream I'll watch, because I'm more interested in HOTS. Heart of the Swarm right now. So when Heart of the Swarm launches, we have an MLG, and then 2 weeks later, we have an IPL, and then there's going to be a DreamHack, you know, a couple weeks after that. And it feels like that's when tournament season begins. So I'm most excited for that.
I'm checking out chat, and some people are like, I'm just going to download my copy and go. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, StarCraft 2 did have that. StarCraft 2, you know, is the second hype party. I mean, I'm excited just because the game's out. It's like, here's the game we're playing now for the most part.
And we'll see what team. I mean, Day 9's party to me was really cool. A, because Greg won, which obviously is that inside the EG bias. But then B, it was because it was like it was an offline event that him and his crew put on, and he talks about it to this day as like one of the most stressful things he's ever done in his life.
Right.
But I remember it with you sitting there. Or no, not you. It was JP, but you were on the stream. You did a segment, I believe. Yeah. But I thought that was a cool way to kick off a game. So when I heard that Team Liquid and Day 9's party was mostly online, I was like, eh.
Well, because I think they're broadcasting the finals from the Blizzard HQ, or no?
Are they?
I was actually reading this, and then I want to talk about the tournament here. Let me bring this back up real quick. God damn it. Let's see. So, where is it? So, it says, TL and Day9's community launch party. We'll be broadcasting live from Blizzard headquarters right up until 9 p.m. PDT in California, and then we'll be joining Blizzard live on stage at the Spectrum Center in Irvine to count down to the midnight release of the game and the final hours of the Blizzard launch stream, which I believe is done at that, you know, that big Universal City Walk place. I don't know. Well, it says the fucking Spectrum Center. Okay. So it's not really like a live party per se like it was last time, but they're still doing it live? I don't know. You're playing in the tournament, Greg.
I played my first match for it, and I didn't even know what it was for. Like, I had no idea it was this. So,
all right.
I know nothing.
The players are White Raw, Cats, Minigun, Grubby, Polt, Idra, Morrow, and TLO. Based off of those who have been playing Heart of the Swarm, what do you guys think of this?
I think Cats is going to win for sure. You know, he has that creative mindset that makes him really good for new games. He's going to figure shit out that's totally going to overwhelm the rest of us.
Actually, I think Polt's just going to collect the check for free.
Yes.
How much money is it?
$3,500
total. $3,500
total.
All right. There you go. Go Cats. And then, the King of the Beta Tournament, which is, of course, that. So, moving on. BlizzCon, I guess, another Blizzard news. BlizzCon was also announced November 8th and the 9th. In November, later in the season, you guys, much later, what do you think about the WCS potential here?
I just really hope
BlizzCon.
I just really hope that they're going to have the final there instead of China. Or it's just so they don't have
the
final.
Didn't we already hear that they...
That's good.
Yeah, so, but
that's
I mean, good. Can we assume...
Yes.
...that they're going to have this is where the finals will be for this?
I think it's not official yet, but
you have to imagine that they're going to. Yeah.
I think it's a big deal. I think WCS, like if you take the international Riot's big grand finals and then Blizzard's WCS finals as your big game championships of last year... It's like international way up here, Riot's probably a little bit higher, but pretty close. They were very on par with each other. And then some, actually, we created the measurement earlier today. It was two ant penises length down there at the bottom. That would be WCS. And it was really a shame because I had kind of the Alien versus Predator experience with it where I went into it and I was like, it's impossible for them to not make me happy. I will love the shit out of this. And then as we heard Nick and Dan yelling at their tech and a panda waddled on stage, stood there, and then humped at a girl.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that shit.
It's just coming in and out. Like, and I was like, oh, they actually fucked up this bad. It's horrible. But to hear it's at BlizzCon where Blizzard does not mess up and where they put on an absolute amazing show, I think we're guaranteed for a fantastic WCS finals this year with a huge audience, great production, and I think that speaks volumes to Blizzard's ability to realize when they messed up and to fix it, but then also I think it's a good, exciting thing for us to capitalize on at the end of the year.
One thing that BlizzCon has never been short on is attendees, spectators.
WoW nerds travel.
When you think about the GSL finals and the amount of people that attended that, there was certainly a much larger spectacle in that than there even was for WCS.
Wait.
Yes, sir.
You just inspired me.
What?
Okay.
Yeah.
Blizzard, I know you're listening. Here, this is for free.
Oh, shit.
Before BlizzCon, first of all, you got to get, like, four stadiums and smash them together, so you got to max out your ability to... Well, you'll hear me out. Just make a stadium that's about the size of California. You announce a new mount that will be handed out to everyone at BlizzCon, and it's like a four-headed dragon tiger with a scorpion tail and a child's bottom. And you say it's a one-time deal, but it's also the first mount that can actually deal damage and create fire behind it. Like, just things catch on fire behind it. You're going to – and then you say there's only 5 million of these available, and they're going to go out to the first 5 million people that show up to this event. And then you hold a fucking StarCraft II tournament with those people.
Like with
I'm going to do one better. I'm going to do one better.
Do it better.
You know what? Mounts, they're fucking 5 years ago. They're 5 years ago, right? Like with StarCraft II being the focus with the WCS, okay, I think you hand out little – participation award bonus cards. And so, like, you know, things like this would happen. You know, I would put my code in and it would attach itself to my Heart of the Swarm. And then, like, I would get this bonus where I would be making Zerglings, but maybe randomly a Baneling would pop out instead of a Zergling. If I'm a Protoss player, I'm making a Zealot out of that gateway. Whoop! Surprise! It's actually fucking Colossus, man. People will come to BlizzCon for the code, it will be the most valuable thing ever.
You have to rope in the WoW nerds too, man. Like
yeah.
Okay, so Greg, many years ago, this is another story that people didn't know, but Greg was in Korea, a good friend of mine, training, but then he gets this BlizzCon invite to go play a match. His first opponent is Yellow, the famed Korean Zerg. Well, there's two different kinds of Yellow. There's the Yellow that did battle at the end of tournaments with Boxer, which, like, inspired people and was amazing. Then there's the Yellow that doesn't give a shit, didn't play Brood War for a long time, but got an invite to a tournament because he's Yellow. He was playing Greg, and everyone in the foreigner world knew that Greg was probably going to rock the socks off this famed Korean on a big stage, so we're all really excited about it. But I remember sitting there watching Greg warm up and about to watch the event. There was this roped-off Brood War corner in the corner of this gigantic event center. And then everywhere else, Wheat, like kind of like an Aliens movie where the walls actually come to life and things fall down from it, were WoW nerds, okay? Everywhere, Wheat. Like, I would use the bathroom. There's three of them sleeping like bats hanging off the ceiling. I wanted to get a pizza. I couldn't get a pizza because the line was going outside the building. They were just like eating ticks out of their hair to buy enough energy so that they could eventually wait for their spot in line for a pizza. And I remember the weirdest moment in my life. Like, I was folding my way through these people trying to get at the StarCraft stage, you know, like kind of, I was, you know, doing one of these things. And then I heard like an announcement and they were like, and I can't do this justice, I'm sorry, WoW nerds, but they were like, and the Death Knights will have a new AOE, and it was like undulating, like, ah, like everyone's screaming. And I looked up over the massive nerds, and there was a raised platform with lights down on it, and they were announcing WoW stuff, and the place was blowing up. And I was terrified, Weed. I was at that moment realizing that no game in the world stands a chance against World of Warcraft.
I think you were terrified because you realized, like, I never jumped on the bandwagon. I'm missing out on so much right now. I understand your jealousy.
So I'm just, it was jealousy for sure, man. We Brood
War? But you know, like, this is actually, so switching gears a little bit, this is interesting because is World of Warcraft obviously not the same size that it was, although it still has a ridiculously loyal following. Does it still have a ridiculously loyal following that's just what brings everyone? And, like, the StarCraft does bring in a portion, but, I mean, let's be real. Like, BlizzCon has mostly been World of Warcraft, just like you said.
I think it's because it has that heritage of people who are like, I've been doing World of Warcraft for 10 years. I have a guild that these are my family. So BlizzCon's like their one event. Because try and name other World of Warcraft events. And I'm not talking about the IEMs that had their PvP tournaments. I mean, like, what else do World of Warcraft people go to? So a lot of people travel to this. California is the
home. They go to World of Walking.
There's a World of Walking?
Oh, yeah. It's like a huge charity marathon. Everyone, I can't keep it going. Sorry, it's not. It's
Oh, you totally had me.
I know. I wanted to take it so much further. I was going to say they cosplay and then they marathon and
I would totally believe that. Sorry.
You would have had three StarCraft nerds on your wrapped around your finger, man.
God. And it's a rare moment when I just come unraveled, but it was just I looked at the control. I was like, he's too innocent. I can't do this.
But anyways, I think it's going to be an amazing audience, whether it's World of Warcraft or StarCraft, obviously. The production glitches won't be there. Blizzard has, I mean, for God's sakes, Blizzard in the past has had Black Sabbath like do their show.
I'm
worried about production. Yeah. They will have production.
I don't know, you say that, but the first BlizzCon StarCraft 2 tournament did have tech issues. That was more Battle.net, but I mean, it's
so did the Super Bowl, Greg. It happens. Quit being a hater. Start being a player.
DeMuslim, you ever been to a BlizzCon?
Yes, I have. I was one of the invites from Western Europe, along with TLO, for BlizzCon 2010 or 11, I think. It was StarCraft 2. And I had to play a Chinese guy in the first round, and it was really, really dodgy. Like, he ended up pausing the game and having his friend come and look at my screen while everything was lagging at BlizzCon.
What?
And then I was winning so hard that the guy then left the game while it was all paused. And I, like, argued with the admins. I said, this is unacceptable. I showed them the replay and stuff, and the Chinese guy just didn't communicate. And, they made me replay the game despite being very far ahead, which, ruined the experience for me.
Wow, that's like fucking traumatizing and shit.
It was
you never want to go to a BlizzCon again.
Ben, you should have played with the Brood War nerds, man. I'm telling you, like that kind of stuff would happen. We told this story, but like admins would come over and be like, it looks like a replay, pretty straight up, and then all the players would start laughing and like, just go back in your corner, admin.
Did you win?
I ended up losing the best of three.
Oh my god!
Like that was the first game of the three, and I'm quite a tilty kind of guy. But, to talk about what happened, I think I T-Rexed him, and I killed his main hatchery, and he only had his natural hatchery left and, like, six drones or whatever, and I was, like, doing really well. And the whole place just started lagging, like, nobody could really move. So we all paused our games, and, him and his friend came over to look at my screen while I was, like, away, and they went back to their place. I kind of saw it happen, and I was like, I didn't really mind because they were going to lose anyway. And then he just left the game, and I was just like, what? And I just thought, oh, this is fine. I'll show the admin the replay. And I showed him the replay, and he just said, yeah, we're going to have to replay that. Like, and I just blew up. For about half an hour, I argued and didn't get anything.
The Muslim.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. It was Luffy or Panda. Panda.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah, he had two aliases. But
it was, like, right after release.
Yeah, he was not, like, yeah, I was very angry at him after that.
Did you just not hear the whole story?
I heard the whole story, and then everyone decided to say that the stream's down. It's like the stream's actually up. There appears to be some problems with Twitch.
Are you fired? You can't say that. There's no problems with Twitch.
I can say there's problems with Twitch. I just did. Everyone who's watching, congratulations. You got here early. Apparently your video's working. If not, VOD will be up tomorrow.
BlizzCon, good. Excited.
BlizzCon,
yes.
November.
What's the
late.
Next thing we got?
Hey, I want to ask you this. So CSL happened this weekend. UC Berkeley wins. You got Suppies on that team. But the real question I wanted to ask is, do you ever think that CSL or collegiate leagues can be as popular as the sports counterparts? Because, you know, take, for example, the obvious extreme example is that a college football game can be exciting as a pro game, even a bowl game, but that parallel, so far, it hasn't exactly proven. Now, there's definitely a CSL following, and certainly, like, AHGL even, like, I am invested in it because I compete in it.
Right.
But
you want to know why those suffer, Wheat? I'm about to answer it.
I think – go for it.
I'm going to answer it. This is actually not even up for debate. When I say this, people's minds are going to get like leaf blowered open. The leaves are going to go away, and below it's going to be just a clean surface. And you're going to be like, shit, he's exactly right. All right. The reason why it works in the sports model where NBA basketball and collegiate basketball has their own kind of separate worlds and are exciting is for the most part because of crossover during NBA. And or NFL or, you know, the collegiate version versus the professional version. there's a chunk of the time at least where one is going on and the other is not. So if you wanted to watch basketball, you're watching this. If you wanted to watch football, you're watching that. Obviously, there is crossover, so it's not a complete and perfect example. Sure. I'm not actually getting the full leaf blower of it that I wanted. But in StarCraft II, the biggest problem is if there's a CSL stream on and there's a tournament that's going on where I could go watch two or three pretty good players or really good players in the event of the finals, or I could turn on this other stream where MLG is having Curious going up against Marine King Prime, or an MLG is going on, or, you know, just the highest level of StarCraft II. Well, I'm probably always going to pick the highest level unless I have an allegiance, like you just said, to that school or to that event. Like, you're going to watch After Hours Gaming not because it's the top form of StarCraft II, but because you're interested. You want to see your opponents. You want to see your team. You want to see the league you're a part of.
Right.
But in StarCraft II, a lot of people don't have those allegiances. I'm not going to watch Oregon State in the CSL because, well, A, they don't have a team, but B, if they did have a team, I wouldn't be that vested in it, that interested, right? So that's always going to be something that holds it back. So I'd love to hear what the other guys have to say, because I think this is something that's really important. And not this as in why it's held back, but I think CSL should be held on a higher pedestal and advertised more.
It'd be nice if it were a bigger thing, because that gives collegiate players, you know, people who have to split their time between college and between practicing, gives them a chance to still compete. But the problem is they do have to split their time, so until way down the road, it's not going to be able to be as big, because collegiate sports, the players aren't as good as professionals, obviously, but I feel there's much less of a difference, especially in just like the visible play than there is relative to esports, because, you know, collegiate athletes, if they're high level, they don't really have to go to classes, they can take kind of blow off classes. They put a lot more time into practice than a collegiate StarCraft player can. Because there's not like scholarships for StarCraft. They're not there to draw the attention to their university through their abilities outside of class. So they don't really get a free ride on some things. So they have to put a lot more time into school. They don't have time to be as good at StarCraft as their counterparts can be at their sports. So, you know, you have the exceptions like Suppy, who happened to be able to make it work pretty well, but even he is not as good as like a Korean pro gamer, and there's no way he can with the amount of practice he can get. He has too many other responsibilities for that to be feasible. And so as long as that's the case, just like Jeff said, the quality of play is going to be quite a bit worse, and you're not really going to watch it unless you have an emotional attachment to it. Because if you're just going on quality of play, there's always much better options.
Yeah, I think you both nailed it. In StarCraft, the way it is, there's just so much to be watching at any one point in time. Whenever I have seen like the collegiate bit on the side of Team Liquid, there's always been something else that I prefer to watch, even like private streams. Like, say if Polt was streaming just private practice on Heart of the Swarm, and these guys are overplaying this like intense collegiate like clan war, I pick Polt every time. And I mean, even though Suppy was playing and stuff, I didn't have this massive, like, I'm really glad he won. The hype afterwards was awesome, and seeing all the pictures, I was really happy. And I was kind of sad I missed it, actually. And I may like watch it next time just to see Suppy play. But again, with no vested interest, as Jeff said, it's kind of hard to get attached to something that, quite honestly, there's other better things to get attached to.
So you bring up a fantastic point, and it was a question that I wanted to ask you guys. Hypothetically speaking, I paint this picture of a world where StarCraft content's actually pretty hard to come by. You know, you can't just go to Twitch and look. It's like a big tournament. Everyone gets excited for the weekend, but then there's just not that much. If there's not as much StarCraft to sort of fill everyone's bucket, do you think that CSL gets a little bit more interest overall?
Everything does. I mean, I think that's something we've talked about in the past. That was kind of one of our defenses of, you know, people were talking about stream numbers dipping down. And that was that when you have more options, you're just naturally going to bleed out viewership. And when you have fewer options, you're going to retain more viewership. So I really do feel strongly that if we had seasons somehow, if there was like the months of November and December were off limits, you just didn't have any professional StarCraft II during then, and you could somehow get CSL crammed in those 2 months, I think their numbers would be phenomenal, and I think they would be deservedly so, because it's a really cool farm system for the overall StarCraft II world. But as it is, like you said, there are so many options, and like Ben just said, I think Ben just spoke with the power of what everyone's probably thinking when they're watching StarCraft, again, unless they have that emotional interest that Idra is talking about.
Yeah, and that actually relates to a point that someone in the chat brought up. one of the big reasons that people watch collegiate sports is that those are the players who are, well, first off, it's the only time you can watch them. They can't play professionally. But they also feed into the professional leagues through drafts and stuff. So this is like you're seeing the next generation of professional players, which is pretty exciting in itself.
Yeah.
And then also, it's the only time you can see them. So, like, I don't really watch sports anymore. Someone famous is playing collegiate sports, then you can't watch them unless you watch that. But in StarCraft, like, anyone in CSL who's even marginally good is probably already on a professional team. Like, you can see Suppy in our Clan Wars. You can see him in any event EG flies to. And the same for other collegiate players. Like, I know Stoji played in something.
Kawhi Rice.
Yeah, Kawhi Rice. But they're all, I don't know, I think Kawhi's still on Light. Stoji was on ISCO, so not sure where he is now. But they're all on professional teams or semi-professional teams. And you see them in any other event they can play. They're looking for more things to play. They're not just limited to CSL. It's just one of the things they do.
Well, if you're interested, go check it out. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people find out that, oh, there's our school has a CSL team, and then they get involved. So every CSL club I've ever had the chance to, like, interact with has been super, super awesome. So
I just want to say before we sound off on it, too, like, I think that CSL is super cool and super interesting and really important, I feel. Like, those guys are going to school but have such a passion for StarCraft that they created a competition that they can actually get around and do.
Yeah.
And I know of clubs at the various schools that practice together and study. If you read Kawhi Rice's blog on Team Liquid, he talks about having insane notes on, like, two of the other teams in the finals. And that kind of thing is really cool. So definitely, like, my advice to people is we just discussed the problems, but do check it out because maybe it grabs you. And if anybody does get interested, I mean, Azubu put in a ton of money. I know Zeris left NASL to go head up this thing. So there's people moving in the direction of making this as big as it possibly can be. I understand why everyone wouldn't choose CSL over everything else, but definitely give it a shot and take a look.
All right, moving on, guys. In case you didn't know, so the Wings of Liberty patch 2.04 is live, and it's basically the transition patch to HOTS. But I guess the funniest thing to come out of it is that the enable enemy unit selection is on by default. Now, I don't remember if beta was on by default. I want to say it wasn't. But
I don't even know what that does.
So on by default, Greg. It's off by default, I believe. So
you just can't select a unit?
You can't select enemy units. Like, you can't tell how much health they have or if you want to check, like, energy.
That's
or
hard mode, man. That's hard mode.
But even if you have, like, hit bars enabled, they don't show up?
Well, it just doesn't allow you to click on it.
Right.
That's sick, dude.
Right.
I think
you can't even click to look at an upgrade, right?
Right. Yeah. You can't see anything. It just doesn't allow you to click and circle the unit kind of thing.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, it'll be fixed for it. But if anyone's like, what the fuck, that's probably what's giving some problems. The other big things were that the global play is apparently live. So I know that if you guys are in a situation where you flip-flop clients, I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts in the upcoming weeks.
That's not like Heart of the Storm, right? Not everyone plays together. It's just you're allowed to switch between which servers you play
for. I believe that's accurate, yeah. From within the client, though. So, I mean, don't you guys typically have to do a bunch of bullshit to, like, switch clients and stuff? It's a pain in the ass, right?
There's a relocalizer, or you do it in the files. But it's kind of funny because we actually had an early release version of this where if you put it in your StarCraft folder, we could actually switch servers. So I'm going to just have to throw him under the bus. Yeah, he's not here. Bryce switched servers for, like, a clan war or something and then couldn't figure out how to use the the changer. So he's actually just been stuck on Europe on Wings of Liberty for, like, the last month and a half.
I guess he hasn't been playing it anyway, but that's – I didn't even know that.
So it's nice that it's now implemented. So
he's going to patch. Like, yes, I'm back. It's like he's
such
been
a funny guy, dude. He comes over to me and goes, hey, do you know how to use the global play thing? I was like, no, I'm just playing HOTS. And he goes, yeah, I've got a left on NA, but I'm stuck on Europe for the last month. Oh, shit. Such a bright story. Anyways.
And last but not least, I think a slow clap is in order. Finally, there is a small destructible something at the bottom of every ramp.
Good.
In some cases, it's like a dinosaur, and it's a rock, it's a fucking whatever.
Like, we've been bitching about that, and they made the change, and I think that's nice. We need to get, you know, some of these maps need to get their close spawn out of the way, but In general, they're listening and they're doing it. And
you know, I think
in another 2.5 years, maybe everything will be pretty
the
good.
Real question is this, is that at one point they said that they didn't want to add that because they felt like it would confuse players. So really, my question is what the fuck changed?
Players got smarter. We
did they? No. Did they, Greg? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make
sure. We've weeded out the dumb ones.
There is like some data farming, and they're like, oh, shit. The players are smarter. We can put this shit at the bottom of ramp now.
StarCraft
fucking
is actually
high
a subtle,
five, Bob.
It's actually a subtle IQ test, and so they've been tracking our progress, and we finally hit the threshold. We can now comprehend little buildings at the bottom of our ramp.
Hey, I'm kind of sad, to be honest with you. It was my way of finding out who a douchebag is. It's kind of like the gold expansion on Antigua, which still is there. All the Zergs that are actually douchebags, I still find out who they are.
That one's less telling, because like, if you get cannon rushed, where else are you going
to
put your third
base? No, if I force you to that base, I understand. But it would be like, I'd pylon block a guy at his natural, and he's like, fuck it! Go into the gold! And they just drop the base, and I'm like, what do I do? And they're like, oh, did you try to go Stargate? Here comes a bunch of Hydralis. Oh, man.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments was watching Todd successfully pylon block, I think it was Golden Light, 3 times in a row, and still getting just, like, smashed. Like, on ladder, just randomly doing that, just because, and then still losing. Fun to watch.
Well, last but not least for these changes, and then we'll move on. I mean, this is, like, from a pro perspective, it actually doesn't even probably matter, but they've added these rewards that are basically skins for different units.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Which will,
they're from a single player, but you can now use the skin in online play so that, you know, your stuff looks different. Just like the Thor for Collector's Edition.
Okay.
Right.
More spikes. Zerglings are the mutated version, which I believe means they have, like, bigger wings.
They have, like, bigger wings. Zealots kind of look badass.
I always cringe a bit when I see someone with a special Thor, because it's like that person spent enough money to get the Collector's Edition. And I facepalm a bit. I'm like, I cannot possibly lose to them.
Well, now it'll just be, I don't think you'll see their units, right? I've got to imagine you could turn this off,
you do. No,
really? I think you probably do. Like, that's part of the point.
The effect they're going for is you can actually change the decal around your hatchery.
No, but it would always look like it should look to me.
No. If they have the unlocked skin, you will see it, because the idea here, Wheat, is that you then go, I want that skin.
I want the Judicator for the pylon.
You laugh, but 3 months from now, I'm going to turn on your stream, and you're going to be fucking destroyed.
Okay, guys.
That Jinx jacket falling off because it hasn't been washed in 3 months. You'll be like, I've almost got the mutated Zergling, and all I want is, it's just ever since I saw it.
Joke's on you. I've got 30 of these jackets, bitch.
All right. Wait, so how do you unlock the skins?
I guess through experience and shit.
Can you play them, or is it only in-game?
So far, it's in-game. It's not. There's no microtransactions yet, as far
as
I know.
I wonder if like tournaments are going to, you know, will it make observing more difficult if suddenly, like, you know, someone is like, I'm going to check out again. What the fuck is that?
Classic trying to make this about commentators and their play.
No. That's not the case. Fuck off. All right. Well, when Idra is playing, and suddenly, because the Overlord skin you use is like the model has like these giant fucking wings that come out, and so they use a strat to just like take 30 of these fucking things because they just like literally black out the sun.
That could actually happen, because like I clump up my Overlords over spires to hide them and stuff, and like if they actually do that, that has an effect. Go. On gameplay.
Wheat's ahead of the curve. You need to alert, actually tell Slash, or he'll get the word out. MLG is like, just as a heads up, we will be banning the second skin for Overlords. So I don't want to see any of that shit. Alright. You're right. There could be some versions there. The Ultras with too many spikes, maybe that creates kind of a little bit of a fear thing, where you're
it's intimidating, yeah.
I don't want to fight that Ultralis. He's got like 6 tusks.
Yeah, with extra wings, 6 Zerglings looks like 24. Yeah. So be ready for that, folks.
That becomes part of
you guys are joking about it? You watch.
No.
In like 5 weeks, you're going to be like, this skin shit is bullshit. Because it'll be something.
I want to unlock, like, at the highest levels, and I'll grind out the games for it. You unlock, like, watercolor mode, where all your units just turn into watercolor, and, like, you run, like, Phoenix across the map, and it spreads a rainbow out behind it, and it distorts the image and shit like that, and now you don't know what's going on, because there's just different pictures and colors around the place.
Oh,
that'd be awesome.
I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. Anyway, it's apparently live. All right, we got some questions that have come in. I'll save that one. We're going to do that if we run out of time or no questions. I got a question for you guys, and I tweeted about this, and actually Greg responded to me. So I have in our document, I have DJ Wheat writes, and this is weird because I'm basically going to read my writing, but Hot's air toss is fucking me up. I am fending off initial void ray attacks, probably not well, but and the second attack typically includes like a carrier and a tempest or with some oracle harass and a mothership core, and burrow becomes less effective, obviously, with the oracles. So my questions are, am I messing up by not scouting this earlier and responding before the first void ray attack, or do I need to just react better after a successful defend? And then I'll ask my second question. Because I feel like if I fail, then I'm going to have to fucking deal with the late game. And my second question is, well, what fucking do I do? So obviously keeping in mind that I don't macro as well as you. I fend it off. I'm like, fuck yeah, man. But then I realize that the next wave is gonna kick my ass. So,
like mid game air attacks?
No, it's like my third base is getting up. I started populating. Maybe there's, you know, a couple of voids come, and then what I don't scout, I guess, after the fact is that there's double Stargate.
Mm. Well, if you see a void ray.
Greg exhaled his soul and then just went
He's
into, like robot
God.
Teacher mode.
The problem
is... When you
don't
scout the second Stargate and the void rays fuck you
then
over...
Then that's the problem.
Yeah, if you see a void ray or an air unit, you either need to put down a spire or a hydro den. You want to get an overseer if you can into their base. If you see two star phoenix, then you got to make corruptors. And under them, you can just go like double upgrade things or whatever. Like, you should be able to just overwhelm them in the air with corruptors, because two star from the start is not particularly good. And if they're going mass void ray, or at least they open up with like three or more, then you can go muta, and then you just take control of the game with like mutaling, baneling. Or if you'd rather go hydra, you just go enough hydras to defend yourself, then you give up a bunch of swarm hosts, then you can push with hydraling swarm hosts. You just got to watch for him to switch to Colossus, because then you start to need corruptors.
So, with now the viability of just going with like a strictly air army. I mean, I've seen even White Rod do it with reasonable success, right? Like, I guess
defensive air is really good.
I guess because that's what I feel like. When it gets to that point where then. You know, maybe I do have an attack on his base, and I do kind of get some damage done, but it's just not enough. But then suddenly it's just the airs bumping out. You think mass corruptors should just be able to – and infestors?
Well, my ZVP right now is basically I go muter, I go swarm hosts, and I get – either I kill them with an attack, or I just do crippling damage and secure so much economy and take advantage with the mutas that I just kind of – like muscle them out of the game eventually. Or if I'm going swarm host, then I kind of kill them with the push before it gets past, like before it gets to the point where they have mass air. I don't really know what to do either. If they get up to, especially if it's one of the maps like Akalon Waste or Nuker
District.
That was my other thing.
I said that this is happening to me on bigger maps.
Yeah, if it's a map where they can secure four bases relatively easily, and then they can just get up to air without having to commit to a substantial ground army, then I don't really know what to do. I pretty much just lose in that situation.
That's what I feel like is happening. I mean,
Tempest, Void Ray, Carrier, and High Templar, I don't know what army's best for that, because they can feedback Infestors or Vipers, particularly Vipers. Hydras against Storm, you can't do that. And Corruptors against Void Rays, like, Corruptors just aren't a counter to Void Rays.
Well, in general, I think the game is changing. Like, it used to be that Zergs didn't want to fight until... Well, actually, I mean, some Zergs took that to the extreme in Wings of Liberty, where they just actually never did fight. They went mega, mega, mega late game and let the Protoss throw themselves against them. But I think that's changed. Protoss I mean, it's changed to a certain extent where Protoss still has dangerous ability in early and mid games, so that's where they're different than the Zerg, who still had, you know, some danger there as well. But for the most part, if you have Templar below an air-based army with, like, two or three Colossus, there is probably no army that the Zerg can throw head-on into that that's going to come out ahead like it used to. It's more often than not going to get feedbacked and stormed into obliteration, and then just what Void Rays do to Corruptors is absolutely insane. So I'm hearing you die at your third base, and I'm saying you need to experiment more with Hypos.
No, not dying at my third. I mean, I guess what's happening is, like, I can defend, but then if I don't close it at that point, then I can't deal with this late game that Idris talking about.
You should be scouting all game long, and, like, if they open up Stargate and they just kind of maintain Stargate, you should have contained them to three bases at the very most, depending on the map. There is a couple that are absolute bullshit where, like, you have four bases guaranteed. But in general, they shouldn't be feeling free to be out on the map with that army. They should be sitting behind a wall of cannons with air units and maybe some Templar. And in that time, you need to be on five or six bases. And, you know, Greg says have a Corruptor cloud in the air. I agree with that. But I feel like that should almost be like a reveal thing you do where it's like, surprise, I have Corruptors. And in the meantime, you're securing a massive economy while running around. And then eventually, when they move out, you need to do the counterattack thing again. Because, again, if you fight that army head-on over and over again, you're probably going to lose out. Whereas if you're trimming down bases, forcing extra cannons, hitting reinforcements, getting their Mama Corps to get them to recall back home a bunch, and then graduating your army to, surprise, 35 Corruptors with Hydra support. And I also think, I want to put this out there too, I think people should use Infestors differently. It's no longer you're going to have 20 Infestors. I don't feel like that's the case in Heartless Swarm, but I think there's something to be said for like six or seven of them that absolutely shut down the if you get the good fungals off, Void Rays. They still fuck over Void Rays on a major level, but they're harder. You have the longer range with the projectile, which makes it very difficult.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. If it's a map where you can't hold them on three base, your goal is just to hold them on three base if they can and up enough and they're going pure air. You know, you want to attack them if you can, but a good Protoss won't let you kill them at that point. And then you're just trying to take map control and whittle them down. Because if they're willing to just sit until they have that air plus Templar army, you're not winning heads up versus it. So if they're on four base, then they have the sustainability to just like make that army and reinforce it and whatnot. And that's when I think the game gets problematic. But if they're on three bases, you can do counterattacks and just wear them down. And then it's back and forth, just whoever controls it better makes better decisions.
Problematic is a good word. I would also use the phrase, want to fucking shoot myself in the mouth.
Hey, it is good. Hard, man, but I'll tell you.
I burned through my political incorrectness earlier in the show.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
There is a certain level of poetic justice going on right now, because I remember playing for 2 years where I had little glass butterflies fluttering around Zerg bases, shitting out zealots. while I tried to not die, and then you know what the worst part Wheat was, and this is what Zergs are getting right now.
What
you do it a whole bunch, and the Zerg would in game get visibly pissed and be like, "Fuck it, I'm moving out." And then the army comes out, and you're like, "Ha, shit, storm, like the carrier," and then it just gets fungled and destroyed, and Hero would cry in a booth. Hero in front of thousands
Hero
of
people. Hero cries in booths.
He does cry a lot, but it still goes with my rant here. And that's okay. Like, it should be that Zergs are all of a sudden dick-worming bases and getting drop-upgraded, and they're flying around with Zerglings, and they're like, stop the Protoss from reaching that level, and then the Protoss goes, Intara will fuck it. Let's move out. And they just move out. Like, and then they attack.
That's pretty much how I feel.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. We have so Eggers writes, have you seen this unofficial SC2 world champion thread? And
no.
I looked at it. And I didn't know that this kind of shit existed, but I think that this is pretty great. So the story behind this thread is apparently they do this in football as well, and we're talking about like football, like soccer, like Ben's football. Where basically they start with the first champion. And then they conclude with who the current world champion is based off of who have beat those champions up to that point. So it starts with Fruit Dealer, and then like as people beat him, of course, then the title goes back and forth. Now I wish I had like some stats on some of these as I went through. But it's really interesting, like, how many times it obviously, like, changes hands and who the current world champion is. Just, have you seen this thread?
I've seen the thread, but I don't know who the current one
seen
is.
Seen the thread, okay. Didn't go into it.
Yeah, okay. I've seen a little bit, too.
Okay. I know that Ben was it for a while, like at the IMs where you beat Nurcio or whatever. You went 3-3 in the group.
Really?
You had it for a game or two there.
Oh, yeah. Muslim defeats
I had it for Nurcio. Quite a bit of...
August
yeah, I had it for 16, quite a bit
2012.
Of
4GG beats you. Inori yes. beats 4GG, and then you beat Inori. And then yeah. Nurcio beat you again to get it back.
Yeah, later on in the finals of WCG Europe, he beat me.
Look at that. So, as it goes through, it gets a little crazy at the end of 2012. As, you know, you see a lot of the names. In October, it changes hands like 6 times. Leenok holds on to it a little bit, but he gets beat down. Life then gets a hold of it. Sniper once again grabs it. And then all the way down to the bottom, you have DRG defeating Leenok in the GSL Blizzard Cup. Parting defeating GRD. Life defeats Parting. Then Roro defeats Life, and Bear defeats Roro. So Bear is world champion.
Bear? Wow.
Who's Bear?
I don't know. Some guy in Pro League.
There's lots of fun stats you could do with that, like how many times it's changed hands in the GSL finals and how often the GSL champ has coincided with the unofficial champ.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
It's just like a cool thing to go, God, there's been that many championships as well. I would go over and give this guy some props for going through and, you know, putting all this together. No, not Bear. The guy that made the thread. Oh. But congratulations to Bear! Oh, my God. It is Bear. That's a great name. Have you ever seen Clerks, the animated series?
No.
Let me tell you. It's only 6 episodes because it was so good they canceled it. But they have this episode that is so fucking hilarious. If you like Clerks or like Kevin Smith stuff, check out Clerks, the animated series. It's really good. Anyway, anyone who's watched it will understand the Bear reference. If not, sorry. Last question.
That got mysterious at the end of that.
I'm sorry. I feel bad for these people suddenly deep down that they haven't experienced the great piece of culture that is Clerks, the animated series that originally appeared on ABC. That is voiced by all the main characters, except it's just animated. I don't get it either. Osset writes, now that Wings of Liberty is almost done, can you give us a quote-unquote expansion report card? I don't know about who was your favorite player to watch, but what was your favorite match you watched and or played? And what was your most memorable moment of StarCraft II Wings of Liberty? Anyone have anything that just pops to mind?
I remember watching, sorry, Greg. I remember watching MMA against Greg at MLG, and it was the game where Greg left on the 3-player map. I forgot what it was, but MMA killed his own CC, and I was really happy for Greg that happened, because up until then it was kind of going a bit iffy.
The whole crowd was going, got it.
And then, GG was called, and everybody for a second thought it was MMA and cheering for Greg, and then it was, cut dead, and then, it zoomed onto Marcus and Day 9 casting that were just like, what the hell just happened? Like, that was a pretty cool moment.
Why was it cool? Really cool. Yeah, it was like, fuck you, man, bro.
It was just mind-boggling. Like, the whole thing was just like, wow, what the hell just happened? Like, I looked at Jeff sat next to me, and Jeff's just kind of like frowning at the screen, just like, Everybody was perplexed.
I was perplexed afterwards because everyone was talking about it, and I had no idea. I didn't realize that happened.
Oh, so about the command center?
He did. Well, yeah. I had no idea until, 10, 20 minutes after the match finished because I just went off.
It was the gold base, too. It was like the gold base with 2 high-yield gases, so...
I still maintain that I was in trouble. I had lost a lot of army. I didn't have much bank. It definitely wasn't one for me.
It wasn't clean cut, but I think... In fact, no point even thinking about it, but I definitely thought you were winning that last fight, which could have snowballed into something better, but he was dropping you at the same time, too. It was a close game.
I want to, I want to win the lottery just so I can be like, Idra, MMA, I've put $1 million on the line. I have set up the replay to play it out exactly like it did in that game, and you will now resume it in Heart of the Swarm, and we will find out who the champion is. I would be in on that. What about you, Greg? Any memorable moments that you'll walk away?
Games.
What's that?
I'm trying to think.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. The games were pretty bad in themselves, but I really enjoyed the series at Dallas where I beat Chris because the night before we had the Hallucinated Void Ray series. And so we come back the next day and I beat him. I don't know. I think it was 3-0 or 4-0. Plus we had a disconnect where I had won. The game was over. So it just kind of to come back from that because, I'm well known as a tilty, emotional player. So to lose a series like that and then come back and just destroy him the next day, that was kind of like a personal hurdle and just generically felt good. But as for entertaining games or personal favorite games, I don't know.
I mean, I'm glad you brought up the Hootsuite Void Rays because...
Wait! Hang on. Let Ben pull up his trousers and walk away. Now you can take a shit on Greg. Go ahead.
No.
You guys are making this hard on me. I'm trying to remember my favorite moment when Greg.
I'm so glad that Greg was like, you know, it didn't really matter because I came back the next day and like did what I needed to do. But like that game was just like one of those games where I didn't feel like I would ever see anything quite like it ever again. And like, you know, I mean. It was an emotional game, man. I was like super fucking Zerg biased at that point. I was like, no, the hallucinations, Greg.
And then did you cast that one too?
I did.
Oh, wow. Fuck. Fucking,
you can't cast me anymore. That's a bad line.
Oh, fuck. It comes out.
What it was. We never put it together.
It's the anti-charm.
Control.
It's like you and our Dota team.
Oh, my God. I actually watched them win their first. The first match I watched them play, and then
But then you tweeted about it, so now they're gonna be paranoid because they don't know when you're watching.
Well, the sad part was too is that team was actually winless so far. So it's like, they won 2-1 against.
Baby steps. Baby steps.
Anyways, for me, favorite games. You know, to be honest with you, I had a. This will be a little bit of a different experience. I actually, at one point, after a couple MLGs, when GSL was first starting out. Got a hair, and I was just like, you know what? I'm going to send myself to Korea, and I'm going to try to qualify for GSL. And EG, obviously, at that time didn't, you know, have the means to support me on that trip, so I just kind of paid it with my own money and sent myself over there and ended up sharing a bed with Greg for a week and then sleeping on Artosis' floor for, like, another week. But it was some of the best times I've ever had. And then in the actual GSL qualification tournament itself, I played quite well. Beat a couple of really good Protosses, and then I ended up losing to a Zerg 1-2 on Scrap Station, but it kind of came down to the wire. It wasn't like I just showed up and got my ass handed to me, so it felt really good. It was kind of empowering. It was sad that I didn't qualify, but it was good that I put myself out there, and I tried, and I almost did it. And then I had the time of my life with some of my best friends in the whole world, so that experience, those games were really important to me and were really fun. But then outside of, like, playing games, my favorite games to have watched were Thorzane beating Pult in the finals of DreamHack Stockholm. Weird connection there. DreamHack hit the production bullseye. I got to be a part of that production, which was just, you know, very lucky for me. And then to have Thorzane, who's like the heartthrob of everybody, win it there was just magical. It was just a magical experience. Nothing else to say.
I mean, I'm kind of with you in terms of, like, it being experience or, like, personal experience levels for me. I mean, I just think back to, like, the initial MLG StarCraft II events where there was no shit, like, four bleachers. And every...
Starting one or zero.
Right. And, you know, like, I mean, I think about that and I feel like I have to constantly remind myself that, yeah, just 2 short years ago, there were fucking no bleachers in front of the screen. And then there was 4 bleachers. And then it started growing and growing and growing. And, you know, being able to see something like, you know, what happened at Anaheim last year with the hype with the Kespa players coming out. And, you know, just seeing, you know, independent production like Iron Squid 2 do their things. Fucking 3 bleachers, no bitches, an opera house filled up. Like, that to me is probably what I will take away the most from StarCraft II and Wings of Liberty, because I've kind of associated it with this explosive growth that happened from, you know, almost overnight. And I think we just too easily forget that, dude, it was just 2 years ago and it was fucking 4 benches and, you know, and then In Control started bitching about chairs once they had 40. Right, exactly.
That's my legacy, man.
So, Chad motherfucking Jones. So anyway, we'll open up the phone lines and maybe people have their own favorite things or want to talk about anything that we've discussed tonight on the show. We'll go ahead and do that right now. And telephone number is 909-581-8509, or you can Skype us. If you're one of the cool kids, you know where to do that. And the phone lines are now going to be officially open. So I don't think we had any other questions, but thank you guys for sending them in. Still going through some of Inside the Game at One More or ITG at OneMoreGame.tv worked just fine. Let's take our first caller. We've got area code 916 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Hello, sir. All right. Jeff, you scared him. Actually, no, I think it was Ben that scared him that time.
Probably Ben.
Obviously.
It was Ben. All right, we're going to take area code 514. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. So anyways, I'm really hyped for what's coming with the release of HOTS. I've noticed recently, like, a lot of people watching StarCraft on Twitch and growing excitement. And I feel it's going to be an explosion of popularity for StarCraft that we haven't seen in a long time. But maybe it's just me. What do you guys think?
And what I'm just curious in what aspect? Like, you mean viewers, players, competition?
Well, I mean,
all of it?
People are going to be it's popular now. I feel like it's growing, but people are going to be playing it. So I feel like there'll be more people viewing it. I'm talking about the viewership to the pros, such as you guys.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Like Jeff mentioned earlier in the show that right now it is like the deep breath before everything happens, and that makes me think of Gandalf, like the deep breath before the storm kind of thing, like the plunge. But yeah, it's in that phase where everybody's kind of like, they don't really know what to watch. Like, what do you put, like, invest all your time into? Like, there's this game that's kind of in the beta. It's still changing. It's still not its, like, final thing, and it's coming out very soon. Like, is it worth watching it then? Or, like, I'm studying and stuff. But once the game's really out, like, that's when I'm going to see competition. It's all going to be about this game, Heart of the Swarm. Because right now, it is just kind of like the test version of the game. Tournaments are still running for Wings of Liberty, so there's kind of like split viewership. Which strategies, which players do you really want to see and stuff? And it's going to unite them all once again. And it's going to like bring all the viewers back together. It's going to give players that kind of belief that they can all start. It's going to be like a fresh start for everybody too, like another plateau. And I don't mean a complete fresh start, but it's going to be, again, like everybody starts off from the stocks, of the running stocks, and you all start your sprint again to get as good as you can. So I feel it's definitely going to reinvigorate a lot of things. It's going to be a fresh thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been kind of nice. Like, you know, one of the big topics that everyone talks about is stream viewership, and I've noticed that a lot of our top streamers have risen up once again. Greg kind of getting the 9,000-10,000s, and Stefano, and I know Grubby's actually had a pretty big surge in his stream as well. So it's kind of nice seeing people starting to they're getting more and more invested / interested in Heart of the Swarm, and I think that's only going to grow as tournaments make that interest much more. I mean, it's going to just retain more people. So I think you're going to find everyone's going to say that they're excited about it.
I'm sure it'll go up. I'm not sure how much it will go up because I don't know. Honestly, my viewership went up because I started doing commentary again, and Grubby's has gone up a lot. I'm not sure what caused that. Just like a surge in his fan base. But if you look at a lot of the other streamers, Stefano's actually kind of down, despite the fact that he's in Korea and playing matches against Koreans, like in Pro League, and winning versus them, doing extraordinarily well. So I don't know. I'm actually kind of less optimistic about release than I was back before the new year. I don't feel like numbers are really going up, like ramping up to it. So maybe release will be like the trigger that gets everyone into it. But it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of hype building, or it feels like there could be a lot more if it was really gonna. It's definitely not bringing us back to like the days of Wings of Liberty beta and post-release.
I don't think it ever will. I think everyone says that.
I mean, actually, yeah. Caller, you seem, and you even started off the call saying, hey, I'm pretty excited. So, like, what has been getting you excited for this? Just
well, frankly,
that it's nearing?
Team EJ has been streaming, EG has been streaming a lot lately, and Hydra has been doing a lot of commentary, and I just feel like it's been great, and I feel like it's building up something amazing.
Right on. So, I mean, from a fan perception, you are, you know, obviously excited and hyped for the launch.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I've got something to kind of say about that. Like,
yes, sir.
Viewership was definitely dwindling towards the end of last year, like, considerably. Everybody knew it. And then in January, be it because the Christmas holidays were just, like, went over completely, everybody's viewership went up, like, substantially. Like, I know that's when Huck started streaming and stuff, but for me personally, my viewers would go up to like 6 to 7K in a day, and I didn't have that for like months and months and months. So I mean, there's definitely been a little surge of viewership at least. And I mean, right now I'm making like 3 to 4K pretty comfortably, whereas before I'd be looking at 2K for a normal day. So
that's what I was speaking to, yeah. I don't think we'll ever return to the Wings of Liberty days. Like, that's not possible. There's so many games, so many options. But there's definitely been an increase in stream viewership, and I think that's nice.
Yeah.
It'll certainly increase. I'm just wondering how much.
Let's take another caller. This time we're going to take Ben. We've got Ben online. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, sorry, I had to mute the stream. Thanks, guys, for having me. Just want to say I'm a huge fan of all four of you guys, and I really appreciate what you guys do for the esports and SC2 in general.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
My question is, I've been playing StarCraft since Brood War came out. I was probably like 11 or 12 years old. My brother turned me on to the game. And I didn't really get to see the transition from StarCraft to Brood War when it happened because I didn't play prior to Brood War. So my question is kind of comparatively speaking, how big of an impact do you think COTS will have on the game mechanically and the way that it's played at professional level? And then also, I've been playing for the last 2 years since, or 2.5, however long it's been since beta. I've been a high diamond, stuck in high diamond, kind of at my level as well, if you can even relate to that level of play. What kind of impact could I see of, like, new units, new strategies? I know it'll take time for stuff to develop, but just comparatively speaking, what the impact will be to the game compared to what Brood War was to StarCraft 1.
Before someone answers, would one of you guys, Brood War players, would one of you guys kind of explain from a competitive standpoint the transition from StarCraft to Brood War? Because it actually started more or less in Brood War, right? Like,
there's only one of us, Wheat, that was around for that.
That was before my time. Got to talk to Jeff.
This is old. Shit. Okay, let me get my dusty old butt, Wheat. Hold on. And I get... the Chronicles of Vanilla StarCraft. And I open it up. Unfortunately, it's an incredibly uninteresting answer. Back then, everyone sucked so much at real-time strategy games that Vanilla StarCraft was not anything at all. It really wasn't. Of course, there's like Warcraft 2 that predated that, that kind of had some, like, people were starting to get competitive in that. There were tournaments in Korea, but that was also more towards the Brood War era, less the vanilla StarCraft. We were playing on maps like you would have, like now, I don't even know how to describe this, Remote Station, if anyone remembers that map, which I'm guessing no. It was so fucking big. I would play 3-hour games on it where I would make 8 Hydralisks, take my ramp, mine out my main base, drop a hatchery at my natural, move my 8 drones to that natural, tech to Ultralis. Like, we were so fucking bad. I don't even know how to describe this to you guys. And you think I'm lying? I'm not. I would show up at a guy's base, and he's got spores surrounding his main base, and then sunkens at his natural, making it so there's no holes to come in. It was an impenetrable base if you only made Zerglings or Overlords, which a lot of people did. So it was so bad back then. Brood War came out, and there was no competitive scene to throw awry. Essentially, there was people playing at a higher level, but even those people, replays weren't available, by the way, back then. If that to blow your mind, in vanilla StarCraft, there was no replays. There was no streams. Just sit on that for a second and think about that. How did we watch? We all piled into games and watched people play.
Battle reports.
Text recall of what happened in a game.
Wow.
That's what we used to do. That's like the fucking radio, kids.
So
that is the radio of StarCraft. So to answer your question in a much more uninteresting way, it didn't do anything at all. In Heart of the Swarm, the game's going to completely change like you've seen in the beta. As far as mechanics are concerned, I'm excited because I do feel like for Protoss in particular, maybe Zerg and Terran to the least extent, there's more things to hotkey and control and do separately. So I feel like the better players will rise even further to the top. But for the most part, everyone below the very top level, not much to worry about.
All right. Ben, thank you for your call.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to take this one. No, we're not. We're going to take this one. Area code 717. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Oh, hey. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, good.
How are you doing?
My question was about viewership on Twitch and how it relates to streaming revenue. Do you think it's more about the person who's actually doing the streaming than the actual game itself? Because I watch streams like DJ Wheat, JP McDaniel, Jeff.
You can say his name.
Basically, all the guys that suck at the game. It's like, I watch all the people who suck.
Yep.
My God. JP McDaniel
and Day9, but Day9 is actually fun to watch. And do you think it's actually less about the game and more about the person who's actually playing the game? That was my question. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Personality has a huge thing to do with the stream. That's why, obviously, there's some streams that have a huge following, but they're not necessarily the most successful players. In fact, that happens all the time. But then there's this – I feel like there's this bend in there, because I think the shittier the game a popular person plays, the more interesting that becomes as well. Whereas if uninteresting played that game, it wouldn't be that fun. For instance, I watched DJ Wheat unbox and then play Colonial Marines, which – is the shittiest game you can buy in the last 5 years.
Oh, my God. So bad.
It's one of two games in my entire life I've ever played halfway through and then just stopped playing because I wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah.
I actually did that. But, yeah, I wouldn't watch anyone else play that. I watch it because DJ
– tomorrow night. So, yeah, the chat also makes it the chat is so great.
What?
I've never seen a more civil but obnoxious chat. No one's actually, like, yelling at each other or calling anyone a fuckface unless it's a wrestler. They're like, oh, man, fucking Kong really fucked that up. Like, get, you know, shit in his face. But it's all about the thing. It's great. It's something you got to experience, guys. It's something you got to experience. Taking another call. We got Johnny. Johnny, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Good evening, Father Wheat, Father Fields, Father Baker. Father Robinson.
Good evening.
Just like to say I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this monster that got me out of bed, to slip into my Spit Reason gear, to walk over to my in-wing computer case and turn it on, to whack on my Astro headset, to use my Black Widow, my Death Adder, to power up my Intel computer with Kingston HyperX RAM, just to lock on to Raid Core now.
Does it have a SSD as well?
Oh, yes, 256 gigabytes.
So it boots in, like, 8 seconds?
Oh, 0.8 seconds, Mr. Wheat.
There you go.
You all consider yourself masters of the StarCraft. Answer this riddle. Does his light exist? For where the flame quenches the soul, there it subdues his might. What unit am I on about? It's a dog.
I'm gonna go with yes.
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 Jeffrey Vincent.
Final
Johnson.
Answer.
You are the smartest man to exist.
Yes.
I'm just gonna end it in that. I feel like you are the smartest man.
I got
to
it
exist.
Though.
Needs
I didn't even find out what I won.
I don't know what he even asked, really. So congratulations. We're taking another call. Carrie is online. Hello, Carrie. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Holy. Okay. All right. I swear I wasn't gonna say holy shit because everyone says that. But holy shit. So you guys can hear me, right?
We can hear you. Holy shit, we can hear you, caller. No, I'm just fine.
Holy crap. All right, sorry. So in 2011, obviously Twitch got really, like, massive, and that's, like, kind of what carried esports. Not carried it, sorry, but, like, you know, like, really helped to grow it a lot. Obviously, you can't deny that. I was wondering what you guys thought might be, like, the next big revolution in esports, like, that would really help grow it a lot more. Or do you think that the way to, like, further help grow it is just to kind of grow everything that we already have individually, and there won't be, like, a new technology to help revolutionize it, like something live streaming did?
Well, I would actually just kind of almost counter question to the guys and say, can anything be as big as, you know, what live streaming was to sort of the in-your-face, now everyone has immediate access to esports?
Nah.
I don't...
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I don't think anything can match that, because, I mean, that was giving people the opportunity to actually watch the content. Everything from here on out is, like, improving the content.
Yeah.
Maybe a better way to deliver it, but even that is still just, like, building on the concept of streaming.
Yeah, just widening the audience and stuff.
Yeah. I know. I think, like, improvements within Blizzard's client where it allows for better spectating experience, like they've already started to do with the HOTS updates and stuff.
Yeah.
Things like that. I'm not sure what else, but nothing is going to be anywhere near streaming.
I think the next, like, I agree with that fully, so my answer would be tempered by that I don't think anything will ever be as big as what streaming was, but I would say that I feel like the next kind of cool thing that will take esports quite a bit further is that a lot more of the production within the different esports, be it Riot, Valve, Blizzard, or whoever else, they're going more towards setting up their own studios. I can't believe I blanked on that word, but we're seeing much more like studio-based production, and I think that's elevating the overall production and making it something we could take to bigger sponsors and say, stick a Doritos bag advertisement on that, and they could feel good about it, as opposed to like. And I know this sounds kind of like a jab at our own show, but it's the best we got for right now. But like a Skype call with the sponsor in the corner, I think that's still a step lower. And with more and more people moving towards the studio, I think that's going to elevate everything a lot.
Everything just becomes more professional. And like that's actually a really big deal when you're selling to sponsors, especially in like an emerging industry like this, because it's just you hear video games and you think that's kind of a joke. Maybe, but then you see they have a nice big studio with a really professional looking backdrop, and just it looks legitimate, then that allays a lot of those fears.
Yeah.
So you guys don't think that like something like I know it was brought up maybe like 6 months ago that like journalism esports might be like the next big thing, but apparently like that idea gets thrown away because, you know, because there's not as much money in it per se.
It might grow. But I don't know how much it's going to grow esports, especially considering, like, you have to consider, right, as much as it makes sense to just model after everything else that's already been done, like, the way that one person is marketing said journalistic piece to the now current audience is through Twitter, is through, you know, I mean, it's through social media, it's through these other methods, like, why haven't we seen that big esports site yet? Is, I guess, the question I'm going to. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to suddenly, like, stack up a bunch of new interest in esports overall if, you know, suddenly the site comes out and people are like, oh, God, suddenly I feel compelled to read about esports.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't know the answer to your question. I don't think we're going to see it for, like, another 7 or 8 years.
It's fun to talk about, though. Good question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It's just one of the, like, I don't know if it's technology. I don't know if it's awareness. I don't know if it's, like, that, you know, first time a really fucking big sponsor gets in and suddenly, you know, that exposure goes above and beyond. But it is a good question nonetheless. So, Gary, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you. I just want to say I really love what you guys do. And I hope you guys do well in HOTS. And I look forward to watching more shows. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. We got definitely time for a few more. We've got Zimmy Doom on the line. Zimmy Doom,
hi.
Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hi, let me mute the stream. Hi,
sure.
just wanted to share my most memorable moment in StarCraft II.
Okay.
It was when Idra did MC on MLG Columbus, I think, where he neural parasited the immortals and just crushed his army, and everyone just went crazy. It was like the first time me seeing a match. I just clapped and cheered at my house. So it was a very awesome moment, and I remember it very fondly.
Nice. My favorite part about that was not the game, but rather Greg got asked in an interview afterwards, I think by like JP or whoever, they're like, tell us about that game. And you're like, and Greg, very in a monotone voice, just kind of mechanically went through it. But then when he got to the part where he's like, and then I neural parasite all his immortals, and I guess immortals are good against stalkers, he kind of did like the slightest smile, probably, like, Then I won the game. It was awesome.
That was good.
I amused myself.
Zimmy Doom, I agree. That was definitely a good game. So thank you for your call, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for answering.
Take care.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Take another. But we've got this area code 408. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am pretty sure you guys are familiar with the caster challenge, where you cast in a certain way. I'm sure that Game Control has done this before.
A caster challenge?
Yep, caster challenge.
Yeah, like when you cast a game and cast in a certain way.
Okay.
So I would like to change that and then ask a challenge question. I would like the Muslim to talk about any dildo that he uses, but use a Californian accent, which means that he has to use mad, hella, and wicked at least 2 times when he describes his build order. And okay. I would like Nick Kroll to grade his performance.
I feel like we're in a petting zoo. Accent.
Mom, then I want this doll to kiss this doll.
No. But wait, make the goat stop biting my jeans.
Okay, it gets better. Yeah.
I would like In Control to grade his performance role playing his Vincent character. His warrior character.
Okay.
And if anyone gets that reference, please put it in chat.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your call. All right. I didn't say they weren't going to do it. Like, I'm just going to hang up on you because for some reason, like, you scarily sound like Alex Garfield. Like, I thought for certain.
Oh, shit. Shots fired.
No, I mean, I thought for certain it was like Alex, like, talking into a phone, like, hey, you know, like a little bit softer. I had to stop for a second. I really. Okay.
I don't know. I didn't hear it.
The Muslim. Californian accent, build order. Do you want to attempt it?
I mean, I can try and do, like, a silly American accent,
But you have California to use hella, accent? Wicked, and YOLO Bay Life.
Wait, what are the words again? Hella?
Hella, wicked, and YOLO Bay Life.
Frickin', I can't do that one.
What do you mean you can't do that one?
You can't do it, man.
All right, hold on. Okay, go. You go.
I'm going now?
Do it right now.
So, start off with a 10 depot, like hella good and stuff, and then I go for 12 wrecks and go and bust down my 13 refinery. It's really pretty tubular and stuff, and and then I whip out my 16cc and go scouting with an SCV. Hella good, yo.
Yellow Bay Life.
That's as good as it's gonna get.
Jeff, do you wish to grade this performance? No.
It was a great job.
Why, thank you.
That's it. No more of that. That was good, though. That was good. And I would have given you definitely an 11 if you would have used YOLO Bay Life, though. Brian, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going good, man.
First of all, I'd like to just say Idra versus Bomber MLG Orlando 2011, greatest moment of StarCraft II, I think. Thought it was great. Very high-level play. My question is, a couple weeks ago on Inside the Game, or sorry, State of the Game, it was brought up this idea of GSLs for different regions, like you have the American GSL or you have the EU GSL or whatever, and that would kind of be something that a lot of people would enjoy watching and maybe help grow esports. And then maybe that could feed into, like, a bigger GSL. Would that be something that you guys would like to see? And then if it did feed into another GSL for all regions, would that just basically take the place of BWC?
Didn't we already discuss this on here? Another show stealing our content?
What we...
Come on, JP, you can do better.
I think that the concept of a Western GSL that we kind of have talked about, like, it makes sense as far as replacing it overall. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? If they, like, the problem is there a European region?
They talked about this. As far as I'm concerned, like, they're talking about how one of the points they brought up was in North American qualifier tournaments there'll be Korean players. So it's not the word they kept using was region lock. That's what kind of brought this in.
Right.
I think the Pulse talked about this as well. They were talking about how if you allowed for a more sustainable regionalistic competition, then there'd be more motivation for players to practice harder. Like, their argument was right now people are like, oh, I have to beat Violet or Golden. There's no chance, so I just won't try. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, it's kind of one of those things we talk about on this show a lot, where it's like, yeah, I mean, if you could somehow get the entire world to unify and create this system where Koreans play in Korea and Europeans play in Europe and North America plays in North America, then I guess there would be pros and cons to that. But it's just never going to happen, so I'm not that interested in the idea, because it's like... And in our next talk, let's paint the picture for a utopian StarCraft world and how you make transactions based on one versus ones, you know, and it's like, Greg would be very rich and he'd do very well unless he went to Korea, then he'd be broke like a joke, and then, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's interesting to talk about, I guess, but I think WCS makes it kind of a moot issue because it's kind of like that, but it doesn't have the final GSL world stage that people would be asking about, so I don't think we need to take it to that next level.
Yeah, WCS is like an attempt to what everyone's talking about. It just doesn't feel... I don't know, it didn't feel as good yet, but I think part of that was because the finals were so poorly put on, as we talked about earlier in the show, just like all the stream issues and the production issues and whatnot. And, I mean, WCS is going to get better this year. They're running it again. They have last year to learn from. And, like, a lot of parts of last year are already pretty good. So I think WCS could be something to look at if you want that kind of thing.
Europe was amazing.
Yeah. Like, the DreamHack European Finals, like, DreamHack-hosted European Finals, that was a really, really good show.
They did a great job, especially that host.
He was amazingly excellent.
Handsome. Caller, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. All right, it's about that time of the show where we see if our friendly man is going to be joining us. And guess what, ladies and gents? We've got the one and the only Goatlust. Hello, sir. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, yeah? G'day. How are you? How are you, fellas?
I'm good. I'm good. Doing good. Thanks for coming on, Goatlust.
Oh, yeah. No worries. Yeah.
How's it going?
Yeah. Not fucking bad. Not
you told
bad
us
at
about
all.
These floods that were happening. Is that all good?
Oh, yeah, it's all blown over, mate. It wasn't a big deal, apart from power outages and shit. And a few unfortunate people getting their houses fucked again, I guess. But, yeah,
that's
not nearly
insurance
as bad
for
as last time.
Okay.
But,
good,
yeah, been a bit of wet weather around here, which is pretty fucking odd still, but, you know.
Yeah. It's going to snow here this weekend, too. I feel you.
Yeah, what the fuck's that shit? Snow.
Yeah,
shit.
It's crazy, man. Yellow Bay life. All right, what's your question?
All right. So, you know, you were talking about the Korean players and not having much of a personality and all that shit, and, you know, Nesty and MVP and that sort of shit standing out a bit, you know, even though they don't really go so hard out on any personality shit like MC did, or, you know, Violet and all that shit. And I was thinking that I actually enjoyed the times where there were more consistent players, like sort of watching the Korean StarCraft compared to, say, the last 6-7 months where it's been more inconsistent. And I was wondering what you guys think about, you know, the dynamic with patching and player consistency, because it seems like there were a lot... The game was being patched more rapidly back when Nesty and MC and MVP were doing well. And then, you know, the last 6, 7, 8 months, we've had this time where there was a whole patch that must have run for months and months and months, you know, the sort of Terran QQ patch. But we were seeing, like, results that were a lot more inconsistent. So I'm wondering, why you guys think that is.
Well, throughout that, we still had pretty consistently good players. Like, Parting won both WCS and WCG, and it's just been, like, a dominant force in GSL all the way through. Although he hasn't won tournaments, so you could argue he's less dominant. But a big thing is actually the casters play a really big part in creating those big storylines. Like, you think of Nesty, you think of Artosis calling him the creator of the universe, and just the ridiculous amounts of hype that he put into them. And they had a similar thing with MVP. And then you had the rivalry between them, which also built up everything. Yes, they were easy to make personalities out of, and you had people who were doing a good job of that. And also, I don't know. So there was just more storylines created around them, whereas now it's just everyone who does good, even if they do good consistently, they're still just, you know, faceless generic Korean winning a lot of games. Even Parting, who actually does have a personality. So I'm not really sure what it is, what's causing that.
The Muslim, you have
what do you think, Ben?
Finding it very hard to think about properly. I'm going to have to think about it a bit more. Sorry.
Fair enough. Jeff?
Well, what do you think, Wheat?
Well, I feel like I have to think about it a little bit more,
God
too. No,
damn it.
I'm just kidding.
What was the question?
What?
I actually misanswered it. He was asking more about, like...
No.
Nobody was listening to Golo.
No, he's at...
No, I was. I was just answering a different thing because I wanted to talk about it.
Okay.
It was more about, like, how the frequency of patching against dominant players and, like, popular players.
Right.
Okay.
Like, they used to patch a lot more frequently, and you had more dominant players.
Right.
Whereas now we've just had one imbalance patch, so you had a bunch of random servers winning, like, throughout the period, and no consistency to get behind.
Right.
I like to look at it as Blizzard had hopefully learned, because I do feel like the patching at the end of Wings of Liberty was, I mean, everyone's using the word stagnant, and if certainly the Zerg players got a bad rap from it, but in general... It just kind of felt like there was issues, and then Blizzard was like, we're working on it. And then they'd come out with this really random thing, and it felt like there's probably a learning curve of the patching there. But as far as earlier on with Wings of Liberty and having more dominant players, I don't find that quite as interesting, because I like a dominant player in this era where they pop up and they dominate the multitude of really good players, as opposed to, I mean, if you guys remember the early GSL, there was some shit games. There was bad groups. Uh-huh. There was bad games. It was just not as interesting. Now, when I look at a GSL group, I'm like, holy crap, there's not an easy group in this bunch, and it's stacked chock full of good players. The only problem is, like, racial imbalance in some of the groups. Like, if there's three Zergs and a Terran or something like that, I don't find that nearly as interesting. But as long as the races are fairly balanced out, with the level of competition where it's at right now, I'm thoroughly excited. And... I think as we push forward with Wings of Liberty, with Heart of the Swarm, I'm hoping that the balancing becomes more wise and quicker, a little bit quicker. I know that they've kind of come out and said that they like to be severe and then take their time to really look at the numbers, but I don't know. I hope they're learning on the fly, which I think they are, and I think we'll see better stuff.
The other thing too is that, I mean, putting the patch as aside, like when you have the building of, you know, of new personalities and just the, frankly, the number of players that were actually competing. Like, look at what it was in those, you know, early days, Golus, versus what it is right now, too. And even with that, like, it kind of changes the sample size in terms of, like, how patches are affecting. But I do also agree, and I know that Idris actually, we've talked about this on the show before, is that some players are actually better at quickly... quickly becoming acclimated to the patch itself. Like, hey, I got this shit. Like, I figured it out. I got it. What? Idra. to that point, like, we're in a totally different space now. So even with patching, you know, I don't know how much that's going to happen. But will we see that same run of people? I don't know. So,
I think the players are better. I think there'll be weird things that pop up and definitely strategies or like unit compositions that just absolutely confuddle people, and there'll be weird stuff like that, but not nearly to the extent of Wings of Liberty. I feel like with the Korean scene where it's at, with all the pro gaming houses, with the money that's behind it, there'll be a little bit of a dip, but it's not going to be nearly as severe, and you're still going to see the best players win.
Any final comments on this one, the Muslim?
Not really. The players that, like, when patches are pretty constant, you always have these players that are the masterminds that kind of come out with the strategies first and such. Nesty was really successful with that for a while, started using spine crawlers more than any other Zerg, and, you know, he kind of set the path for all other Zergs to follow, and the quicker, slightly more fast-paced players took advantage of it and could make the most of it. And MC, like, he's still going to be good. Like, some of these players, they slump for reasons that aren't even to do with the game itself, like patches or whatever, like can be going through emotional slumps, be it with other things. But I think these guys pretty much got it. Like, they nailed it on the head, and I can't really add to it.
All right. Goatlust?
All right.
Satisfied.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
All right.
Take
Have
care
a good
down
one,
there.
Guys.
Peace.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that's pretty much going to wrap up our show for the day. We got Live on 3 tomorrow, but let's, like we always do, do our final thoughts. The Muslim, start with you.
Hello. Thank you for watching, guys. I really appreciate it. My stream's been going really well recently. And I'd like to thank Team EG and all its sponsors, Raidcall, Monster, Kingston HyperX, Razer, Astro, Intel, and Inwin. You've all been fantastic. Thank you very much. My stream is www.twitch.tv/TheMuslim. I stream on there regularly, and I've been trying to pump out roughly 80 hours a month. So if you want to watch some Terran on Hots, do watch me there. I'll be partaking in the King of the Hill tournament on Thursday. I'm the current king there, so I really want to do well. And my Facebook also, or Twitter, @TheMuslim, Facebook, TheMuslimUK. Thank you very much for watching, guys, and see you next week.
Greg?
Okay, all the same sponsors as Ben. Go for Jeff as well. Thank you to all of them and EG. Follow me on Twitter @Idrajit, IDRAJIT. I've been streaming a ton with commentary recently, and the viewership has been really, really good. So thank you all for coming out to watch that. And because of that, I'll continue to do commentary. You can watch that at twitch.tv/EG_Idra. I always tweet about it, so following me there is the easiest way to find it. Thank you all for watching and for the good questions and the call-ins.
Big shout out to everybody for tuning in. Really appreciate it. We have a great audience on Inside the Game. I too have been streaming, and I'm trying to do more commentary, so In Control TV on Twitch, Twitter, EG In Control, obviously. But I want to give a big shout out to the creative department of EG. We released that Astro video, and I think it was a big success. It was really really fun to work with, but people that you may have heard of but do not necessarily know, Sean Green, aka EG Leica on Twitter, Quantum Pope on Twitter, also known as Conrad. Picture recently shown of him just before kissing Greg, and then There was a shrimp there.
It was edited.
My lovely wife, Anna.
Biased journalism.
She's way too engrossed right now in work to turn around or anything like that.
Hi.
You're listening to my show right now? Okay. Okay. Well,
you can communicate
also,
through technology, man.
Colin DeShong, he's the guy that makes sure they all actually do work, who's heading up that division. And he also went full Oprah on Reddit, so it would make sense to tweet pleasant things to him, because apparently he's got it within himself to just randomly start giving out Astro headsets. So start tweeting at him.
Many people don't know. I didn't mean to interrupt In Control.
No, but go ahead.
He worked briefly as a stunt double for Orlando Bloom,
yes,
in the Lord of the Rings movies.
He's actually his ass in 3 or 4 of his earlier movies. Colin was the ass double for Orlando Bloom, but then they found out that his face looks the same as well. So he's also
right. He's
the ass and face double for Orlando Bloom.
That's accurate.
Orlando Bloom just actually isn't in those movies. It's all Colin.
It's Colin.
Yeah.
It's just a stage name.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to say that. Slash my nose now.
But also, I want to give a big shout-out to Alex Garfield. A lot of you guys have only seen him come out of the shadows when EG needs defending, but it turns out he's actually a big mastermind behind a lot of the projects we do, and he had a huge say in that video as well and made it possible. So it's just... it's kind of cool when we're able to do those things, but a lot of times people don't necessarily know who goes into making those videos. And I just wanted everyone to know that they had a big part in it and deserve some shout-outs.
Awesome. All I have to say, guys, thanks, Monster. Thanks, Kingston HyperX. We got Live on 3 tomorrow with Slasher. Fucking hella good Tubular. YOLO Bay Life 420. Thanks for tuning in to Inside the Game, episode 62. We'll see you tomorrow for Live on 3, and again next week for another episode. Appreciate everyone tuning in, and peace. We're out of here, bitches. Later.